To EAA Radio. It is 12:17, and we are joined by Mike Bauer from the NTSB. And how are you today?
Doing good. Doing
excellent.
Good.
And due to it's Sunday, it's the last day of the show, and we're kind of not on our A game today, I didn't get a chance to meet you. So what do you do at the NTSB?
Well, I'm an aerospace engineer at the National Transportation Safety Board. I work in the aviation systems group. So I investigate systems, aircraft system, during an accident or an incident. So in the event in an aircraft, let's say the pilot complains or there's a report that the brakes didn't work, and we go through the, in the investigative process, we'll look at the braking system, we'll take a look at the brake pads, the calipers, the actuators, and test them out, try and see if there's any issues with them.
What is your particular background before you arrived at the Transportation Safety Board?
I graduated from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University out in Prescott, Arizona, aerospace engineer. Ended up working for a bunch of aviation manufacturers for Bombardier and Gulfstream and Cessna. Also worked in the avionics field with Honeywell and Rockwell Collins. Feel like I'm advertising for all these companies.
You got a very diverse background, so you worked on a lot of the components that you would have in an airplane then.
Exactly. I worked in flight test. I was a flight test engineer, so we did a lot of the testing before certification for the aircraft.
So are you a pilot also?
And I'm a private pilot.
Private pilot. So did you get to test fly the aircrafts?
I did get to get some stick time in a Gulfstream.
Nice.
Wonderful.
That's
wonderful. It's
awesome.
A great airplane to fly.
It is.
You list off all those different manufacturers and corporations that you work for, and that just points to the fact that by the time you arrive at the safety board, all of that lends a hand to the analysis that you must perform.
Oh, definitely. There was a lot of working on all the different systems, working with the FAA for certification for the aircraft. You got to learn all types of stuff. And with any new airplane, with any new certification, there's problems that you uncover during the certification process. So there's a lot of troubleshooting that goes on. There's a lot of reviewing of data, testing out the systems. So it lended very well to my group that I'm in right now.
And I've seen a statistic that is about 12%. And that's probably somewhat old. It's probably off by a few percent. About 12% are mechanical issues, but the primary cause of accidents. Is that holding still?
I apologize. I'm not real well-versed with the percentages, but it sounds correct. So
do you work on the larger accidents, or do you work on all the little things, or a little bit of whatever happens to come your way?
It's all accident dependent. I typically work on commercial aircraft.
Okay.
So usually a major accident or incident. So it'll be a major 787, 767, 737s, business jets. But there are times where I've worked on general aviation airplanes and experimental amateur built aircraft.
So you could start be investigating an incident where somebody runs off the runway and the airplane's mostly intact, and you can recover most of the airplane and you can look at all the parts. Or you could also have incidents where the airplane breaks up in flight.
Correct.
And then you have to try and put it all back together. How do you do that?
It takes a lot of time, takes a lot of, you end up going back to the basics of engineering. You'll look through, there's a lot of telltale signs in the structure. You'll start to see witness marks, stuff like that inside the components. You work with the manufacturer. They're very good at, they understand their components.
Sure.
So working with them and going through how the component operates and what you see there, it helps tell the story of what you see.
So how do you determine if something's, damaged because of the accident, or if something was damaged and caused the accident?
You need to take a big picture approach, because you'll look at certain little factors that you see in the components, and you kind of have to lay it all out. Typically, you kind of lay it out in what you call it, like a timeline, and then take all the available data that you have to you. And part of the analysis, it should lend well to how it all fits in the sequence.
I've read plenty of accident reports where like the engine has been damaged, and they take it back and they run it again and test all the components. In your protocols, in your analysis, how much of the engine do you try to get the engine running again to see if there's some sort of insight you can gain from that, or is at some point where it's unfair to try to put the engine back together and say that it was working fine?
Well, I'm not a power plant investigator. Mm-hmm. I've worked with some of the regional investigators that, and also some of our power plant investigators. What they might do is they assess the situation with the engine manufacturer and see if the engine can be run. You want to make sure it can be run safely, because mm-hmm. there could be damage that you cannot see. And they'll make an assessment of that, and they might run the engine, or what they'll do is a teardown and then look at the specific components and then take an analysis from there.
Yeah, I think they did a teardown of the engines off of the Miracle on the Hudson, and they tore all of them apart and, you know, just looked at all the damage from all the birds.
You can find signatures of a bird strike. There's ways that they can use certain, like ultraviolet light and stuff like that, to see organic material which might be left from a bird strike.
So what are some of the interesting things that you've found in the components that you mostly look at?
It's very interesting, and it always goes back to very basic engineering skills that what I learned in school. Like, you start learning basic chemistry, basic engineering principles, and as you go back through a failure sequence, you can actually still apply those laws and those methods and see good signatures like that. It's amazing, I think, to see the amount of force that it takes. You can hold like a heavy piece of landing gear actuator, and to see it broken into so many pieces.
Because they're pretty strong in the outset. I mean,
correct.
You see some pretty hard landings. We've all been part of some what feel like some pretty hard landings. And then to see what it takes for it those components to fail, I suppose, is pretty impressive.
Correct. My previous job at the safety board, I did aircraft recorders, flight data recorders, and you could see the damage that some of these flight recorders would see. And to think that the box survived the impact forces, the fire, even the being under the ocean for 15,000 feet, that's
impressive.
Yeah, correct.
And then that they can still get data off of it.
Exactly.
It's just, I mean, but they're designed for that. I mean, they call them black boxes not for their color, but what they look like after the crash.
And there was a lot of focus, especially with the disappearance of MH370. And I guess the last great hope was for these witnesses, which is the solid state electronics of the CVR. And how many are now of the airlines are operating now, at least these the world's leading airlines, just about everything's converted over to solid state, or is there still some tape drives out there?
There still are some tape drives. They're tape drives. There's even we recently did an accident where there was a foil recorder.
Ooh.
It was a public use aircraft. It was a 707, kind of like a KC-135, and it contained a foil recorder.
Wow. That's it surprises me that they would still have it. Now, were you able to get all the information off of that?
Actually, during the investigation, they found out that the foil recorder, there was a cartridge placed in the recorder, but they didn't spool the recorder up. They just inserted the tape cartridge, and the recorder wasn't even set up to record.
Ah.
So the recorder survived the crash. We were able to find the foil in it, but there was no data to be recorded.
They never hit record.
I noticed that the recorders are oftentimes they're transported in water, especially if they're found in water.
Correct.
Is that, do they feel hypothermia in a sense? I mean, what does that preserve? How does that, is something that they have to bring it back into the dry state slowly, or?
You're trying to stop any corrosion that could occur to the unit.
So it's in some sort of solution then?
You try and put it in fresh water. Sometimes it's kind of hard when you're out in the middle of the ocean on a ship to get like a distilled water or deionized water. But you end up putting it in the freshest water you can find. Because what you're trying to do is stop the or inhibit as much of the corrosion as possible that could occur.
Most of that corrosion won't happen if it doesn't have contact to the air, correct? Yeah. So then you can get into a
bath.
What we'll do is we'll get to the laboratory. It'll come in a cooler. Mm-hmm. And then what they do is we have processes and procedures to dry it out
safely
to avoid corrosion so we can recover the data from it.
Cool. It's just all the things that you guys have to do in reconstructing an accident just is completely mind-boggling. I don't think many people realize just how much work there is and how many different expertise you all have in order to put an airplane back together and figure out what happened and then go on to that next part and say, hey, we learned something, and we can prevent the next accident by doing
exactly
X, Y, Z.
And do you have checklists? Do you have checklists to say, okay, when we're going to examine this component, is there a step that you go through for at least maybe like receiving evidence and things like that, or is each particular part unique?
There are, let's say, generalized kind of checklists that you follow. There's certain things that you'll always want to do. And then as you go through the component, you might have to deviate from that course because the procedure you have is you're going to test it a certain way. And as you start taking it apart, you can't do the procedure you want to. And you work with the manufacturers and try and come up with another procedure to get to what you want. So,
and one last quick question before we wrap up, and that is, do you find that a lot of times, if it's a mechanical issue, is it installation or is it maybe a not well thought out modification, say in a home built or things like that?
I don't have too much experience with the home built. I'm sorry, so I can't kind of enlighten anything on that. So I can't answer that question.
No worries. We thank you very much for coming in today and talking to us. How's your week been?
It's been great. It's been the weather, can't complain, you know. It's been nice. People have been very friendly at the booth. It's been a great time.
Well, we've been talking with Mike Bauer from the NTSB. You're listening to EAA Radio.